are here at the 2020 CUNA GAC in wonderful Washington, D.C. Look who's in the studio lounge bright and early. Mr. Andrew Price from the World Council of Credit Unions. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic.
Good.
I didn't have to take a plane to come and see you. Just a metro ride.
I know.
Which, that's an adventure, too.
But. Like, and that is an adventure. I've been on that. So I actually really like the metro. It's really handy. But sometimes, if you're new here, I've gotten lost on it before.
Oh, yeah.
The first couple of times I came here, I don't even know where I was. I got scared, but I've eventually found my way back. So, but yeah, I love, yeah, anytime you don't have to get on a plane,
that's good news, depending on where you're going.
Yeah. So. So how are you, by the way?
I'm happy. Fantastic. I'm doing great.
Good.
Happy to be here at GAC. It's amazing.
It's here already. It's the 2020 version of it. So before we get into our topic at hand, what are some expectations you have for this year's conference?
I'm super excited about this conference because CUNA has done a wonderful job of giving us a platform to help us talk about World Council issues. Mm-hmm. We had our foundation event last night at the Italian Embassy.
Well, Brandon Michaels, who was here just now, was there last night.
He was telling
me all about it.
Yes, it was fantastic.
I
don't know how many people, 400 or 500, I think, showed up.
Wow.
Really wonderful to help highlight some of our development work that we do and all the good work that the foundation does, disaster recovery, all that kind of stuff. But even better is CUNA's doing a good job of helping to highlight our advocacy work and how it relates to the United States credit union system. Mm-hmm. And we have a breakout this afternoon. Ryan Donovan's going to host it for us.
Oh, Ryan. Okay.
He's everywhere.
Watch out for that guy.
He's everywhere. I don't know how he does it, but
he does a good job.
But also Steve Stapp, who's our board chair of WOCU, is going to be on the panel.
Okay.
And we brought in some of our big guns from Europe. Rafał Matusiak from the Poland credit union system is also
really?
Going to speak.
Oh, really?
Okay. To kind of talk about, you know, how all these international regs work over there
they
as well.
They have a really progressive system over in Poland. I'm very impressed with what they're doing over there.
It's emerging and growing, and it's a wonderful example of how credit unions can grow and serve members in other countries.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, that kind of leads us into our topic, is like international trends credit unions should watch out for here in the U.S. And so, I mean, that's a great segue into what we're talking about.
It's perfect, because what we're trying to do, particularly at this conference here and with the breakout, is really kind of educate people on, you know, hey, what's happening internationally is kind of a roadmap to what's coming down the pike with you.
Yep.
And so there's a whole series of issues that I think will be of interest to a United States audience here.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to go over a couple of them?
Absolutely.
So you got a whole thing of notes there
The first one that's pending, and you have bills in Congress now on this, and you have California that's adopted legislation, is privacy and open banking. Is a big topic, and what's gone on with the EU GDPR is spreading like wildfire everywhere. And so you're seeing states, California's CCPA copied almost virtually what the EU GDPR did.
Really? Okay.
And there's about 20 other states that have kind of, I call them copycat legislation that's starting to copy that too. And so, you know, the concern in the US is that you're going to have a patchwork of privacy regulations, and so there's a bill in Congress to perhaps preempt some of that and perhaps
a
level playing field.
Have some sort of standard, I guess, an overall kind of an umbrella standard.
What's bad in the U.S. is your privacy framework in the banking side, Gramm-Leach-Bliley, right to financial privacy, is really rock solid, pretty good. It's the retail side that all these data breaches, I mean, that's where you've got some issues at, and so credit unions getting caught up in that they need to do it in the right way to take a look at us. There was an adequacy determination that the EU did on the privacy rules in the United States with the EU-US privacy shield that's there. When they looked at the banking sector, they're like, we're fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's all your other stuff that has us concerned.
Right.
And
right.
They were concerned about like Google, Amazon, Facebook, those kind of people.
Oh, yeah.
But the banking sector, they're like, y'all have that pretty good. So. It's a good validation, I think, of what credit unions
No doubt, So what does this mean for credit unions moving forward, especially this year?
Yeah.
I mean, and being an election year and all sorts of stuff can happen.
Yeah, so the big trend that's going on internationally is something called open banking, which we have seen take hold in Australia, and it's a massive compliance burden for them because the consumer rights that are coming from that, there's a shift from it being that the business owns the data versus the consumer now owns it and controls it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the legislation is tending to go. And that's very popular with politicians that want to get elected. They want to do right by consumers because that's votes, right?
Sure, sure.
So in Australia, the open banking has kind of taken GDPR even a step further to say that if a consumer wants to take their data you know, to another institution and get a mortgage. Hey, I don't want to get my mortgage from you. I want to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Open banking says that institution has to take their data and not only give it to the other thing, everything they have, and but do it securely. And their systems have to be, you know,
wow,
able to talk. And so it's
right.
It's a tremendous amount of expense.
I could imagine, yeah.
We have an example of there's a billion-dollar credit union that I think their cost ran in the nature of about $800,000
to
comply with, you know, just setting up the basic framework there.
I mean, that's a lot of, obviously, labor and funds, and oh my gosh,
yeah,
I had
so
no
that's,
idea.
That's a trend that's out there, and I wouldn't be surprised if you start to see, you know, politicians catch on to that in
right.
the United States
right.
as well. So keep an eye out
okay.
on that. So
definitely, and that's going to be, what's the timeline on that? Is that for 2020 or...
Well,
or just
so,
whenever.
I can never guess when Congress is going to do anything. So
well, that's true.
I mean,
that is a.
We'll have to talk to Ryan Donovan about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he'll be here later.
I focus on the rest of the world, but I'll let him take
okay.
the United
All
States.
Right. Fair enough.
But
fair enough. Anything else on the notebook there?
Yeah, a couple things coming down the pike. Another big topic is sustainable finance, which is everything dealing with like green mortgages and what you invest in and trying to deal, how the finance sector is going to deal with climate change, addressing mm-hmm. those type of issues,
okay.
and what the role is going to be in that. And the United States has pulled out of the Paris Accords, so you're probably going to have a little lag here until the United States wants to address climate change
mm-hmm.
a little more.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the world is gung-ho on we need to deal with climate
really?
Change.
Okay.
And so there's all kinds of things going out, encouraging mortgages on homes to encourage, you know, putting solar panels on or water recycling.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all those things that you do mm-hmm. with trying to save the environment.
Right, right.
And so how you market, if you market it as a green mortgage, hey, I have a green mortgage, there's going to be regulations on that.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a focus on your underwriting. Are you considering, you know, whether this building is environmentally sound,
mm-hmm.
and how are you working with that in your underwriting?
Mm-hmm.
The investments that a institution is, the Basel Committee has green bonds now that are say, hey, these are good investments that help promote, you know, climate responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so how those are marketed, how those are put out there. And so how the finance world is dealing with addressing climate change
mm-hmm.
is a tremendous issue that's coming down
yeah.
the pike. And for a credit union, that means, I hate to say this, more regulations,
yeah,
right?
Well,
and more responsibility, and perhaps changing your balance sheet, perhaps changing your underwriting as well.
Yeah. So. Well, I was thinking, as you were talking, I was thinking, are any of those, are those incentivized to kind of prompt people to get a green mortgage, like you said, or something along those lines?
Yes, it's all of that. It's
okay.
It's not only incentivizing financial institutions to act responsibly
right.
As far as how they conduct their
right.
business and where, you know, where they invest their funds at and,
right.
and all of that stuff, but also the, you know, the regulations on how you market that. So on the retail side as
mm-hmm.
well as the investment
okay.
side.
Okay, good. Well, yeah. good. I'm glad to see that it will prompt people to like take action.
Yes, and I would not be surprised if the U.S. eventually starts to you know, come around to addressing a lot of these issues
mm-hmm.
too, notwithstanding the withdrawal from the Paris Accords.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's smart that we at least address it and check it out. So what else you got? What else you have there,
yeah,
Andrew?
The other big thing I want to point out is a move in the EU on the payment systems, because
okay.
there is a strong move over there to move to what we call immediate payments on the fund. So you have to have 24-hour, 365 immediate funds availability of funds. So anything with an ACH, a wire, a check,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, even Apple Pay, you make funds availability today, but you may settle, you know, the next day or overnight.
Okay.
If you have to do it immediately, wow, that's a lot of, and United States might be familiar with Venmo. I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
an instant payment
yeah.
system.
Yeah.
But if it's mandated for a bank to do it, that's going to be a huge compliance
really? Okay.
burden. And the EU is looking to move in that direction. And so the issue is, does that spread like kind of GDPR has spread
mm-hmm.
as well? Will
mm-hmm.
that force the rest of the world to, hey, if I want to deal with Europe, I'm going to have to, you know, if my system is going to work with that, it's got to kind of meet their standards. So that'll be interesting to see if that it does get mandated there. In the United States, the Federal Reserve is working on faster payments, which is similar, but I don't think it's going as far as what the EU is doing as well. So,
how does that affect the consumer? Does it trickle down to the consumer, or in this case, the member?
It's a very consumer friendly if you have instant payment. Your bank account reflects immediately the transaction that just happens instead of sometimes there's a lag between when you run your card and when it hits your account or when you send a check. There's always that float, and people play with that all kinds of day. But if it's instant, I think it's better information for a consumer.
Right.
But on the flip side, there's a lot of legacy systems out there, a lot of changes that got to be done to core systems.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be a wholesale change for the industry.
It sounds like it. Certainly sounds like anything else on the list here before I get back to work here?
The other thing that we work on continuously, the big picture out of the Basel Committee and proportionality, and I think for a U.S. audience, you see the NCUA delaying their risk-based capital rule.
Mm-hmm.
The intellectual framework for that comes from a lot of the work that we do with the Basel Committee, and that's on proportionality. And we got that language put into the Basel standard so that for smaller institutions, they right-size the regulations based on size, risk, and complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And so, risk-based, a lot of the capital standards were designed for the big boy banks. Very complicated rules for them. We don't like regulators for credit unions putting that complexity on. It's not needed. We operate more conservatively. So, the risk-based capital rule getting kicked down the pike, the intellectual framework for that really comes from proportionality. That comes from an international standard. So once again, I don't think there's an area of your operations that doesn't get touched by some of the international framework.
No doubt.
So those are some of the things on my plate coming down the pike.
That's a buffet, Andrew. That's a lot. That's a lot.
Hopefully give your audience something to think about in credit unions.
No doubt. And
there's a lot
to wrap up here, where can folks keep an eye on all this stuff? Obviously go to the Woku website?
Woku website. I have a regulatory outlook guide that I've started passing around here. It should be on our website later this week. I talk about all of these issues kind of in depth, give you links to the articles if you want to read. Hey, here's what's coming down from the standard. Our website has all of our comment letters are on there. All of our positions are on there. If you want to learn about any issue, reach out to us. Feel free to email us. It's on our website.
Right on.
And come to these conferences.
And come to these conferences as well. All right, Andrew, I'll let you get back to work. Appreciate the time as always,
sir. Appreciate it,
Always an education, so thank you very much for that. I appreciate it. It helps me as well. So good stuff. There he is, Andrew T. Price from Woku. Go check him out.
Thank you.
Well done, sir.